You can put all the French Revolution context you might want over the top of it, but really, Les Miserables is totally about Milwaukee Bucks fans. This is Inside the Locker. We were nerds, stuffed into lockers in school, but we studied sports while in there. Now, live from Monster Dome in Austin, Texas, get ready to geek out about sports. Welcome to Inside the Locker. We will get into the controversy of Freddy Krueger being left off the Dream Team in just a moment. But first, we got some things to do here on the show this week. And this is, in fact, Inside the Locker, the geeky sportscast here on oneofus.net. I am Brian Salisbury. I'm like, I guess, the Captain America of this group, although I really self-identify more as French-Canadian. Don't worry about it. And surrounding me are the other sports Avengers. I have my Iron Man, Mr. Adam Charles, also known as Beef Nuggets.
I'll let it pass.
All right, good.
Would that make Jarvis Tater Tot?
I think so. I think that would make Jarvis Tater Tot. And, of course, the lawyer
this
Supreme.
This sounds so delicious, by the way.
Who is, you know what? That makes you Daredevil. Who is Russian, apparently.
I was up for Nick Fury.
What makes you Dill?
Well, no, you're a lawyer, and the only superhero lawyer I can think of is Matt Murdock. So.
Or She-Hulk.
Okay. Elliot is our She-Hulk.
Jennifer Walters, baby.
And then, of course, the Silent Storm, as I have called him before. You know what? That's not a real superhero, but I think Silent Storm is your actual superhero alter ego.
It's Storm with who doesn't talk.
Who's a dude? Yeah. JC DeLeon.
Hello. My superpower is when I come back from the grocery store, no matter how many bags I have, I carry them all on one trip.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is a very helpful superpower. Inside the Locker, just like all of our content at oneofus.net, is available on iTunes. Just search One of Us in the podcast section. You can also get the show on Stitcher if you're not a big fan of iTunes. You can follow the show on Twitter at ITLcast or like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. And guys, I can't tell you, I really can't stress this enough. This is the perfect time to become a subscriber to oneofus.net if you haven't already. We've just launched all of our incentives for the various levels of subscription, and even at the $2 red shirt level, there's a lot of cool stuff to be had. So right there on the sidebar, you can click the little subscriber logo, and it'll tell you all about what you get at the various levels. There's a video there of Chris and I being generally silly, but also giving you the information you need. And there's a blooper reel at the end, so enjoy that. So we have a lot to talk about this week. We're definitely going to dive into last week's NFL draft in our main segment, but first, hold the goddamn phone. It's sports news.
Flash, the Captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at SeaQuest. These are the scores and stories.
Stop the press.
JC, take the wheel, as Carrie Underwood would say.
Yeah, so we're going to start off with some NBA coaching news. And a really surprise. So the New York Knicks hired Phil Jackson as their president with the promise that he was going to be the head man in charge and make every decision.
He's the Nick Fury, actually, in New York.
The Putin of the...
No, the Putin.
Because I will get a Medvedev in there.
I just got it. The Nick Fury.
Yeah, see?
Oh, hey. Sorry. I totally cut that off.
That's
all right.
That's because I didn't think of that.
So he, and kind of behind closed doors, but, you know, amongst the where it became pretty well known, validated the idea of Steve Kerr being a head coach and being the head coach of the Knicks. Steve Kerr has never been a head coach before, ever. He's been a GM. Some would argue that his tenure as a GM wasn't very successful with the Phoenix Suns. But, so the idea of Steve Kerr being a head coach kind of caught fire, and all of a sudden every team that fired their coach wanted him. Well, Steve Kerr went and decided to become the head coach of the Golden State Warriors.
I knew it. I fucking knew it. I knew it. Okay, so when the Golden State Warriors fired Mark Jackson, we were like, wait a minute, that's so weird. He took them to the playoffs 2 years in a row. It's the first time that's happened to them since the 70s. You know, they were playing so well. Why did they fire Mark Jackson? The first thing I thought of is he asked to be fired. And now this may be part and parcel of the fact that I've been rewatching old Mad Men episodes, but I swear to God, no, my thought process on this was that there's a conspiracy here where Mark Jackson walks into the Golden State office and says, listen, fire me. I want to go to New York. This is where I started my career. People love me out there. I want to play for New York.
But I tell you what you can do. If you fire me, I'll go to New York and you guys will get Steve Kerr. And I told this to my roommate and he was like, I think this, you're just looking for conspiracy theories. I swear to God, that's what's happening. Next week, we are going to hear that Mark Jackson is the new coach of the New York Knicks.
That's a good
theory. I will put money on it. I know that's because there's no other explanation for why Mark Jackson, with the kind of success that he had had in Golden State, was fired. It was baffling. And I immediately thought there has to be something going on behind closed doors. So I think, a la, Shut the Door, Have a Seat, which is a season 3 episode of Mad Men, he walks into the head office of the Golden State Warriors and is like, just fire me. Just fire me. That'll get me out of my contract. And then you'll have Steve Kerr because I'm going to New York. I swear to God that's what happened.
I don't necessarily know of that because the players seemed to like Mark Jackson. He seemed to like it there, but he didn't get along with management very well, which wasn't a secret. And Steve Kerr is a friend of the owners of the Warriors.
Well, I just imagine from Steve Kerr's perspective, I would much rather be with a person with a company that doesn't have as much leverage over me.
Yeah.
I mean, Phil Jackson, that man made his career.
Yeah,
true.
So it's like I'd rather be coaching, especially my first head coaching gig, at a place where I have a little bit of autonomy and don't have somebody breathing down my neck and all that press that you have in New York of why aren't they winning yet? Because the thing is, he now gets to walk into a set like an organization with young talent that's good and coming up. And in New York, you're walking into a shit show.
Let me pose you another theory on exactly that, though, and this time from The Sopranos. So let's say you're Mark Jackson, and you're thinking to yourself, yes, if I go to New York, I'm not going to have as much autonomy. But guess what? People in New York love me. So guess who they're going to blame if shit goes wrong?
Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson becomes the lightning rod for criticism in that situation. So you're right. He's not going to have as much control. But that blame that you're talking about, since they already have – the city of New York already has a relationship with Mark Jackson. If he goes to New York, he effectively makes Phil Jackson the lightning rod for all criticism.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot less pressure actually to go into an atmosphere in which you're not necessarily expected to succeed right away than it is to be right in the coattails of success and having to live up to nothing less than at least that success.
Well, I would agree if it was in New York. Like New York is weird in that if they're not winning within a year, they just want you out.
Yeah, I think people are still going to hold blame to the Knicks owner, James Dolan, if things don't work out well. Because since this happened, the Knicks have already gone on record saying, James Dolan has gone on record saying, well, we weren't really all that convinced that Steve Kerr was going to be a head coach when Phil Jackson made it very clear. And Phil Jackson is supposed to be the head man in charge. So people are already kind of wondering if Phil does have
true. I think it's like one of those, I think it's one of those cognitive dissonance things too. Mm-hmm. Like when you're trying to date a girl and then she ends up with somebody you know and you're like, oh, I never really liked her anyway. It's like,
you know what? Honestly,
you just lost out.
Conspiracy theory, I think this is all Spike Lee's idea.
Conspiracy theory, I think they're holding out for Whoopi Goldberg.
I'm just saying, when it comes to conspiracies, he got game. So
I'm the furthest thing from an NBA.
Yep.
I'm the furthest thing
that
from
was
an
not
NBA
the
conspiracy
right
theorist. But one of the interesting things about this is Jason Kidd never been a head coach. Some of the names on the list of the Knicks for the next head coaching job are Derek Fisher, who's currently playing, Luke Walton, who used
Luke
to
Walton.
Play for Phil.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Wait, they want a guy who's currently playing to be their coach?
Yeah.
Are they, following on the Jason Kidd track?
Right.
That went so well for Brooklyn. So
this is what I'm getting at. So all these guys have never been head coaches before. Yet you have a New York legend who's been an assistant coach for I think going on 10 years in Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing can't sniff a head coaching job in the NBA. And I don't
know. That's crazy.
Why. Yeah, when the Charlotte Bobcats, specifically last year with the Nets, Patrick Ewing's son went on Twitter and kind of defended his dad, saying, "My dad can't get an NBA interview for a head coaching job, and he's been an assistant for so long."
Well, do they have a rule like an NFL where they have to interview at least such and such black coaches?
They don't. But Monty Jones actually has really interesting things to say about how the NBA treats its black coaches, and it's kind of an interesting thing because, I wonder how long the Warriors are going to stick with Steve Kerr and how long the Pistons are going to stick with Stan Van Gundy, who we're going to talk about here in a little bit, because Steve Kerr got a contract, 5 years, $25 million. Jason Kidd last year got a contract that was 3 years, $10 million.
That's
quite a difference.
Jesus Christ!
Kerr was a GM before. At least,
Kerr
right?
was a GM before.
So at least he has, I guess, I don't know, some kind of managerial, I guess, experience.
Yeah, but people would argue that experience did not go well at all.
Like his biggest claim of fame is that Michael Jordan passed him the ball at the end of a championship game. Yeah. And he, I'm serious. That's why people know who Steve Kerr is.
I mean, he does hold the record for he is, what, the highest field goal percentage for a three-point shooter?
And his career? And his last name is an insult on Deadwood.
There you go.
So there's that much.
Well, I'm just saying, would anybody at this table know who Steve Kerr was if he didn't hit that shot in that game?
Yes, no. Because I'm a San Antonio, because he played for San Antonio.
Okay. See, I would not have known.
Yeah. I'm a basketball nerd.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm with you, Elliot. I'm right here, baby. I'm right
this
here.
This doesn't happen often. I'm liking this.
No, but I mean, it's like you're talking about one of the top five three-point shooters of all time, you know.
It's definitely going to be interesting. The Warriors are a really fun team to watch, and so I mean, I hope it works out just for the Warriors' sake, not so much Steve Kerr's, but
I will give $5 to everybody at this table if Mark Jackson is not hired as the coach of the New York Knicks.
I wouldn't have to give you anything. I take it.
Yeah. You guys don't have to bet a goddamn... I am so sure of my madman / Sopranos theory that I know this is what's going
to
happen.
Ryan, don't go to Vegas.
All right. We'll find out.
Not if, even if you win, but whenever you bet, you have to bet something that we can lose, too.
Yeah. Dude, I bet $15. I'm perfect to go to Vegas.
Okay.
He's going to go to Vegas to win us our $15?
Yes. Yes,
indeed. I got him bad with the Sharks.
Well, you already kind of mentioned it, JC, but so, yes, Stan Van Gundy. Stan Van.
And people thought he was going to have carte blanche at his choice of a job, whether it be Golden State or New York. Ended up going to Detroit because Detroit is giving him all the power. He's president and head coach, and he was on the Dan Le Batard show today.
Oh, Dan Le Batard.
Yeah, I actually like that show.
Don't be a Le Batard.
So the Pistons are now one of three teams in which a person has a dual title of president and head coach. And so he did say on the show, he's like, I'm probably not going to fire myself in the first year. So,
well, Stan Van Gundy was upset when he heard that Carte Blanche wasn't a food truck that served white chocolate chocolates.
What's the hierarchy for this? Like, so there's owner, then president, then what, GM, then head coach?
Yeah.
Then capo, then button man. And then just associate.
And Mr. Pink.
Yeah.
So what are the job functions of the president then, I guess?
The president's the guy who hires the GM.
He breaks the tie in the NBA Senate.
Okay.
So he gets to control the entire team, effectively.
Oh, so he hires the guy who's he's going to answer to, only not.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
it's as complicated as the Lannister family tree at this point.
Yeah, he's basically Tywin Lannister.
He hires the GM and the assistant GMs, and it's their main job to kind of do whatever they can to build the personnel.
Okay.
And which he can be like, this personnel doesn't work for me, or since it's their job, like it's
which is good.
I mean, you're going to be the meat in between me.
This is getting to a point I'm not comfortable.
You know, Adam, I did not need to picture that. Thank you. Because like these are just for show now.
It seems like he wants to follow the Spurs.
Elliot pointed at his testicles.
Yeah, and that Greg Popovich is the president. And he has a really good working relationship with R.C. Buford, who's the
GM,
yeah,
of the RC Cola fortune.
You know, the thing about Stan Van Gundy is that his asking price wasn't as much, and the Pistons actually owe the Iron Bank a tremendous amount of money.
Well, they did give him $35 million for 5 years, so he's getting paid $7 million.
Look,
a year,
that didn't serve my Iron Bank joke, so I'm just going to throw the facts out the window, Jay. That's how this show works. It's in service of the joke. I don't care about quote facts or figures. No, that's a very good point. So the question obviously now is who has acquired the better coach, or who's in a not even that question. Who is in a better position now with the team that they have and the coach that they now have to put together a strong winning season? Golden State or Detroit?
Golden State, because the Detroit roster is shit.
That's true. Well, that was a stupid question.
Yeah. one of the things I think Stan Van Gundy is going to try to do is he's going to try to ship off either Brandon Jennings or Josh Smith or both. Brandon Jennings, who I think on the show I talked about, at one point this year I watched him on TV dribble out the entire 24 shot clock by himself without passing it and getting a shot off.
Wow.
He totally Michael Scotted it.
Yeah.
That's an Ishtar move right there.
Yeah, and Josh Smith is a guy who perpetually is open for 18-foot jumpers because he doesn't make them.
So much like the city of Detroit itself, the Pistons have become just a wasteland, a dearth of hope and dreams.
You know they need.
But look at Toronto this past year. Like nobody expected Toronto to be able. You know, I think something you should consider is the fact that this is it's an Eastern Conference team versus Golden State, which is in the Western Conference, which has a lot more The competition that's actually there, there's room for Golden State to go down.
Yeah.
Detroit can only go up. Yeah. And they're only going up in a conference that has two powerhouses, and that's it.
Yeah, Washington made it a decent way this time.
Yeah.
So did the fucking Atlanta Hawks. Sorry, I won't mention that again.
And, depending on how the ping pong balls come out for Detroit,
yeah,
it could be an interesting draft for them.
Yeah, it's funny. Watching the NFL draft is really exciting, and it's, you know, tense. And watching the NBA draft is like watching that blonde girl in the local news pull the lottery numbers. Anyway,
we should have a blonde girl pulling those numbers.
We should. I do just want to mention,
as
we were sitting here tonight, the Pacers did beat the Washington Wizards to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals against, shocker, the Miami Heat. So, yeah. As everyone and their mother who has never seen a basketball game before in her life predicted, it will be the Heat and the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals.
ESPN, but the Pacers were such a disappointment.
ESPN has something to talk about for a few months.
Don't like that match.
The Pacers already won, so Brian won't beat us now. Let him go.
I swear to God. Anyway, get us to the next story before I murder this side of the table.
Just poking him.
So, I mentioned how the ping pong balls will roll out for Detroit. Speaking of ping pong balls, the Milwaukee Bucks. The Milwaukee Bucks have a interesting. Let me find a story. Yeah, I have an interesting promotion for their season ticket holders. They sent out a package, and inside the package was a single ping pong ball, symbolizing the fact that they are going to be a draft lottery team, and hopefully maybe they get the top pick in the draft, which could be Andrew Wiggins, could be Jabari Parker, could be Joel Embiid, or they could get screwed in the draft.
The weakest draft in a while.
Get the 12th pick.
That is not what that represents in my mind. Let's think about the major export of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Sorry for your facts.
Anyone?
Beer.
Yeah. Beer. Beer is actually the major export of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So let me just pose this theory. Maybe they're sending out these ping pong balls to reemphasize the fact that Milwaukee, like everyone who lives or works in Milwaukee, including the Milwaukee Bucks, are better at beer pong than they are at basketball. I really think that's the point.
Well,
they
have
to
make
home.
A shot in beer pong, so I don't there think you go. Either.
But it'll bounce in. You can't really bounce it
so
in
they
on
can
the
do
court.
It's like, this is why we're not winning, guys. We're practicing wrong. You're bouncing it into the damn
ball. Depending on the house rules. I mean, that's the thing. It's like the NBA doesn't recognize house rules.
Fucking rollback rule.
I know, right? Anyway, yeah, this is a weird promotion. Just to remind people, hey, don't give up hope entirely, because we might get someone better.
Yeah, and I think the thing that people fail to realize about the way the NBA draft lottery works is that they have the best chance at winning the top pick, but it's still a 25% chance.
Well, not only that, but if they really wanted this to be effective, they would have sent 5 starting ping pong balls to all of their fans, because they really need an entirely new starting line.
Well, let's think about it. Have the Milwaukee Bucks ever been good? Because the only time I remember them being remotely good was when they had Glenn Robinson.
I will have you know that when I played church ball, we were given the designation of being the Milwaukee Bucks, because every team in our church league got a NBA team name. And when that happened, no, they were still not good. Yeah. So, they've never been good.
I remember Ray Allen was there for a few years, wasn't he?
That's right.
Before he went to Seattle?
Yeah.
I don't remember if they were good when he was there.
He wasn't really.
He was good when he was there.
Yeah, but he was with the team in the same way that you might have a layover at the Milwaukee airport.
It's like, yeah. I'm here because I can't.
They were okay when Andrew Bogut was there, and Andrew Bogut now plays for Golden State. So
there you have it. So enjoy your ping pong balls and another losing season, Milwaukee, because it's gonna happen.
You still have
Milwaukee.
Beer.
Milwaukee, the good land. We're not worthy to hear the next story, but we're going to anyway.
So the next one's going to be a feel-good story.
Woohoo!
I like
to feel good.
In the last couple of days, there's been a viral video that's caught fire, and it isn't Jay-Z getting his ass beat by his sister-in-law.
Little kitty!
Oh, yes. Jay-Z, by the way, Jay-Z getting his ass kicked by his sister-in-law, he now officially has 100 problems. Jay-Z, you were saying.
I was there when made that tweet. I'm very proud of you, sir. I'm not being sarcastic.
You can't say Jay-Z and Jay-C in the same sentence. I don't know who you're talking about.
And by the way,
I don't have a sister-in-law.
I want to say the cognitive dissonance here. You know, we so often in pop culture you see people doing the wrong thing. I'm not saying you should applaud people for doing what they should do, but just a slight head nod to Jay-Z for just standing there and not doing anything.
Yeah.
This woman's just wailing on him. He's like, I'm Jay-Z, I'm a grown-ass man, there's no reason to hit her back. And that's like what you should do. You shouldn't hit women. And it's like, he's just like, just standing there.
Because if you don't do that, hey, diddle diddle, Ray Rice gets no acquittal.
Yeah. So like, you got people giving him a hard time on Twitter. Like, oh, you got beat. What is he supposed to do?
Yeah, that's
like,
it's a no-win situation.
You sit there.
If he doesn't fight back, they're going to claim he's a pussy, which is what they're doing.
People are doing that.
If he had fought back, he would have been this horrible. He would have been.
He would have been
Ray Rice. He would have been Ray Rice.
Yeah, but he just sort of. And I'm like, he didn't know the cameras were there. He just was like this because it's the right thing to do. And I just want to say, fuck you to all these people giving him a hard time for not hitting a woman. Fuck you. You don't know. Stop being a human being and go live in the trash.
That's right. That being said, we are opening up a battered rapper shelter. Anyway, JC, you were saying about this kitty cat.
So a video went viral. There was a four-year-old boy who was playing in his front yard.
Oh,
he was attacked by a dog. This dog just kind of came out of nowhere, walked up to him kind of gingerly, and then just started biting him, shaking his leg, and out of nowhere...
Just the, body checks.
Out of nowhere, the family's house cat named Tara... comes out and knocks the dog away from the kid, chases the dog away from the yard, and the cat goes back and makes sure the kid is
that
okay.
That dog was a pussy.
It's been some like 2 days. It's already amassed 5 million views on YouTube. The reason why we're talking about it on this sports show...
Because that cat is clearly a Taragarian.
Yes. And plus, like, the cat came out like a fucking linebacker.
Yeah.
The cat did. He tackled the shit out of him.
That cat didn't swat at him. He's like, motherfuck you. Boom. Just trucked him.
All of that. Plus, the cat, Tara, is going to throw out the first pitch for the Bakersfield Blaze, a Class A affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds.
No, it's not. No, it's not going to do that because it can't do that. I'm all for applauding this cat.
I'm reading it right here. You can't deny what I'm reading.
No, I can because that's not what's going to happen. They're going to like, I don't know what they're like. Are they going to hold the cat by its appendages and shove its face into the ball?
That works so well because like forcing a cat to do anything is a good idea.
It's like, and seriously, it's like, I'm sorry, you want to force this cat to do something? This cat is the one you want to be like, no, do what I say or else. Because you're going to get your ass scratched up if you fuck with this cat.
Whatever.
There is so much Will Ferrell semi-pro going on in this whole stunt.
I applaud the Bakersfield Blaze for letting Tara throw out the first
pitch. This is about you and your cat thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I like dogs, but I'm a cat guy, and I'm just like, yeah, that's right. I like, see, cats can be loyal, too. Like,
I will give you
that. Around to it.
I will give you that cats can be loyal, too, but this does not shake my affirmation that dogs are 100 times better than cats.
I agree.
You still
don't know whether or not this cat is actually really indifferent to this family. For all we know, this dog, like, fucked over this cat in some way, and is like, there you are, you fucking asshole. And then,
also, the part no one's talking about, maybe this little kid just a dick. Like, maybe this little kid just had it fucking coming. Like, we don't know. I'm just asking questions.
Maybe it's one of the situations, like, when I was little, like, me and my older sister used to get in these horrible fights. But if anybody outside the family messed with me...
Would you say you fought, like...
Cats and dogs.
Yes!
But if anybody outside the family, like, messed with me, my sister would just lay him out. Like, I remember one time, one of her friends, I was like maybe 5 at the time, was like, just give me a hard time picking on me. And my sister came up to her, and she's like, so-and-so, you're a horrible person. And you want to know why your parents got divorced? It's because you're a bad person, and you made them divorce. They didn't want to fucking deal with you. And so that was the level of my sister. So maybe this cat doesn't really care about this kid. He's like, look, that's my kid to fuck with.
Yeah.
You know what?
This is my territory.
Also, I love the fact that
nobody's heard the dog story yet.
That's true.
Okay?
The dog's going to be put down in about 9 days.
I also love the fact that I lobbed that pun up to Elliot. It was like, we have now become a pun tandem like CP3 and Blake Griffin.
It's like,
just throw it up there.
Boom.
I love it.
Right there, bring it in.
Love it. Yeah, dogs are better than cats. JC, what's our next story?
So the next story, much to the chagrin of Scott Smidlin, we're going to bash the NCAA a little bit here. I understand a lot of what Scott, and a lot of people say that the NCAA can be helpful to a lot of people, but my biggest issue, my biggest issue with the NCAA in how strict it is a situation like this. So you have a University of...
I think it's Oklahoma?
No, a Boise State football player, Boise State football recruit is going to be a freshman this fall. Currently homeless. Just kind of down on his luck, has had a really rough life. It's amazing that he was able to have his stuff together enough in high school to become a high school football recruit. His story got out that he is currently living in his girlfriend's car. Sometimes he sleeps in a hotel when he has money. Boise State fans turned out and they wanted to help this kid. Well, the compliance office at Boise State says, no, you can't. The NCAA isn't going to let you.
So by compliance office, you just mean Castle Grayskull, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is some horse shit.
Yeah. So
we are denying Oh my God, he's homeless and we're denying him aid.
Yeah, and so this is like this is my biggest
problem.
But
he doesn't want to have those aids.
Yeah, I've always said I'm not a continuing proponent of NCAA athletes shouldn't get paid, but in a situation like this, like you should be able to give a football player like buy him a dinner, like buy him a steak or something.
Well, not only that, but it's like by Boise State taking this guy on, they're saying basically we recognize that you have talent, we're going to profit off of that, but enjoy continuing to live. Yeah. In complete abject poverty.
Yeah, how can room and board not be something that is just, you can just take that. You can just take room and board, like shelter. Yeah. How can you just not take shelter?
And I don't want to put it too much on the compliance office because they're just trying not to get in trouble with the NCAA. I want to put it on the NCAA.
You know what, you're right. You're absolutely right. When I said compliance, when he said that, I was thinking of like, I didn't even think about what he was saying.
Every university has a compliance office to say, no, the NCAA is going to slap our wrists.
Whose job it is to basically protect the school from the fucking evil overlords.
Yeah, I said it. Being a lawyer, like most of the time you have to be the wet blanket.
Yeah.
And this guy's like, look, I don't want to be a dick.
Yeah,
but they're going to
at least give him a dry blanket. He's fucking freezing.
And so the reason why we're going to bash the NCAA here is because, I mean, that part of the story is bad enough. Well, the NCAA, much like the players starving story from a few weeks ago, the NCAA has decided not to deny aid to a homeless football player. And they're going to allow Boise State to make arrangements for him to live on campus before he's officially a student.
Yeah, that's great. They had to petition for that.
Yeah, this is me not patting them on the back for being decent human beings.
Yeah, all that does is illustrate how much power they have that they shouldn't have. And, I mean, don't correct me if I'm wrong, but the NCAA is not an official body appointed by the government or anything. It's a private organization.
Also, I'm sorry, but you've just described a fiefdom. That they literally had to go to the Lord and be like, this wanderer seeks refuge in our village. May we please house him? Thank you, O merciful king.
On to the next matter of where the coconuts come from.
I'm sorry, I will give... this is just a basic human decency thing that should have been done from the get-go.
Yeah,
so.
What does NCAA think that a bunch of homeless people are going to come and play football and they're going to be great?
Yeah.
That's a Disney movie?
Hey, Elliot, it's all about the education. That's really what they provide is education. Like... teaching them how to, you know, live in a cardboard box.
You know what? Me being totally ignorant, what the fuck does the NCAA provide? I mean, it's an organization that does something. What do they do?
I think they just promulgate rules.
They collect
to play each other.
That's money. What
you know, it's the reason why a lot of people think one of the solutions is for maybe not the smaller schools, because some of the smaller schools are able to not necessarily get away with this stuff, but it's easier for athletes to kind of get what they need, like the big schools and the big conferences. Some people think the solution is that they should just unite and just kind of be under their own governing body separate from the NCAA.
It's going to be – that Northwestern case is going to be real interesting.
Yeah.
The outcome of the petition, basically, the case in front of the court to let the athletes of Northwestern unionize – the outcome of that case is going to be exceedingly interesting.
Yeah. Like, even the MPAA has a purpose. It's misguided, but it has a purpose. Like, you know what it's supposed to represent, even though it doesn't represent that? The NCAA, I have no idea what they represent. I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know what the function of that body is supposed to be.
Because you hear the name and you think, well, it's a union of athletes. And it's like, it's not. Athletes have no say at all. They have no place at the table. So what is the National Collegiate Athletic Association? What is it that they do other than collect money? That's if you can put it to me that way without using the completely feigned and erroneous statement that it's all about providing an education because the college is already doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure why they exist at all. That's a good question, but that's probably a debate for another day. So JC, move us away from this highly controversial story.
So talking about the NCAA again.
Damn it!
Okay, so we were stuck between the Scylla and Charybdis of the NCAA right now.
Yes, we are.
I think that's what it was.
So Oklahoma center Gabe Icard, has a girlfriend who is real.
That's no Manny Tail situation.
This is important to state.
So the thing about his girlfriend is that she apparently has money and has
good for him.
has been able to provide this football player with courtside tickets to Thunder games, and I guess the NCAA is okay if it's like a close relative or like a girlfriend or anything.
As long as you're fucking prove.
As long as the benefits are sexually transmitted, they're okay with it. Yeah.
Long story short, the NCAA.
That'd be a weird compliance officer,
right?
Did you come inside? Did you pull out?
Poor JC.
Sorry.
Long story short.
This whole Reggie Bush USC situation just got really weird.
Long story short is the name of their sex tape. Hey-oh!
Okay, sorry. I'll stop.
Long story short, the NCAA forced this player and his girlfriend to sign an affidavit saying that they are legitimately in a relationship, which is something that employees at big corporations have to do.
Yeah. Oh, but no, they're not a big corporation. Well, because these kids aren't employees. They don't get paid.
It's about education.
Yeah, it's about education.
Yeah.
It's funny. You know, you mentioned Manti Te'o. When I first read this headline, I thought, yeah, they're literally doing this so that they're making him sign an affidavit that she's real. I thought that was the whole thing. Like, oh, she's got money. This is going to be a highly publicized relationship. We need to know right out of the gate whether she exists on this planet.
Yeah. And he has a really funny quote. Like, somebody asked him about it, and his official quote was regarding the NCAA. It was, yeah, they did some digging, and I'm actually compliant official with my girlfriend.
I wonder when they have sex. He's like, we're about to comply. From
Facebook official.
So they're regulating homelessness and relationships. you guys are right. They're not an evil organization at all.
I mean, is Warren G doing a drive-by and regulating all this? Yeah. Everybody who's 30 years old will get that joke.
Yes, and I love that.
You know what? I'm glad I finally understand now what this story was actually about. Because I have no idea what it was about.
No, let me explain it. Let me break it down like this. Nate got the freaks, and that's a known fact. And before I got jacked, I was on the same track. I'm sorry. Back up. What was
and you got to earn your keep.
You got to be handy with the steel. You know what I mean? That's from Young Guns.
I think that's the main issue is that he was seen with courtside at Thunder games, and I think people are like, well, if you're a poor NCAA athlete, how do you afford tickets?
You better be fucking the girl that gave you those tickets.
but it doesn't look like he was born a poor. He's not a jerk because he wasn't born a poor black child.
Jerk references. It's funny because it's a reference. All right.
I've never been insulted to where, like, I feel good about it. So he gets to also put down something I hate, which is myself and Family Guy.
All right. Please, next story. Please, JC.
Sports movie news.
This is apparently the sound we make when that happens.
You guys like Kickboxer, right? Kickboxer's an amazing
Kumite.
Movie. Kumite. Yeah. Well, they're remaking it, as they do. And they're remaking
Why are you sad about that?
They already remade it 7 times. It's called the Kickboxer sequels.
He's only sad because they won't put it out on VHS.
But all of them starred Sasha Mitchell.
Yeah, but they were just Kickboxer again. They've remade this movie so many times. It's insane.
Also, really, the fourth one was like this weird action movie in like a Mexican drug compound. It's weird.
Starring the original Tong Po.
How does that work?
Who apparently becomes a Mexican in between parts 1 and 4.
Well, that happens, right? You get bit. Oh, I'm gonna stop.
All right, sorry. So, who's starring in this Kickboxer remake again?
George St. Pierre, who.
Oh, Buck Struckley.
Probably not a real actor, and that's.
No, you're right, Adam. Great. No, I have great feelings about this remake. No, I think it's going to go swimmingly.
It won't be a warrior, I guess.
No, if they wanted to make
Between George St. Pierre, he's not starring in it, or at least as far as we know.
No,
he's just in it.
He is.
He's not the Van Damme character, is he?
I'm pretty sure that's why they're getting him.
I like how Adam's brain cannot compute that this movie's going
to
be this bad.
This is the part that he doesn't want to admit.
No, all I'm like. You've seen
Kickboxer. Look at this guy and tell me he's not going to be the Van Damme
character. Has nobody seen Kickboxer? Kickboxer is a shitty movie, guys.
I disagree. I understand that it's a shitty movie. I understand that I actually may be confusing it with Bloodsport, okay. But that just points out the issue here. I actually now realize that I am confusing it with Bloodsport. That is
the whole Kumite thing,
I completely missed that.
It's like you're meta, like, commenting on yourself as you listen.
Kickboxer is Naksu Kao.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie sucks. Oh, I don't care anymore. Even though, but you gotta, Adam, look at this guy and tell me he's not gonna be the Van Damme character.
You're doing like a great,
come on.
You're doing a great Brock right
George
now.
George St. Pierre is the French guy from the beginning of Captain America.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I watched some UFC. I know.
Wait,
I'm familiar with George St. Pierre.
He was by Shrek the Deepa.
He was the parkour guy.
Yeah.
Maybe. I actually feel a lot better about this now that I know facts.
Captain America, a movie that actually
now
knew.
That he's been in a movie, now that he can be in another one.
Where he's literally been in a movie where he's been in an awesome fight scene. Okay, you know what? I retract my statement entirely, except that they shouldn't remake Kickboxer because it's a stupid movie.
You know what? I tell you, a star who hasn't got his chance in action movies, only been directed DVD.
Patrick Ewing.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Cuba Gooding Jr. He's a star.
Stop that. You don't believe. You can't just say things you don't believe. I do that.
You know, honestly,
that's my job.
Actually, you know, if they are remaking Kickboxer, it does make more. It can make sense, I guess, both ways. He could play the Van Damme character, but he could also play Van Damme's brother character, which that actually was a real kickboxer. That was Dennis Alexio, who is a famous kickboxer. So
also if you look at the picture that they chose for St. Pierre on Fox Sports, The guy behind him is doing the most epic "Did you just fart?" face I have ever seen. In my, like, that is some serious, like, what the fuck is that smell face? All right.
And the other guy's turned around like, yep, yeah, somebody did that.
Now that we have covered the story as professionals.
professionals.
Yeah, nobody's getting paid. Yeah. It's the NCAA.
Yeah, we are amateur podcasters. This is for education.
It's really about the education of dirty words.
Okay. Speaking of which, one of us would like some interns.
We would.
That's okay. It's official. I do have a wife. She signed the papers. I'm going to hand it over to you guys, okay?
Don't. That's not
she
bad.
Provides my home and board.
That handover. The bag. Kind of
I'm just saying Slevin's going to throw out the first pitch at the Round Rock Express game and it's going to be amazing. What were we talking about?
Slevin would just go to sleep.
Yeah, much like that cat is going to. Because the cats nap 30 hours a day, which isn't even possible.
Yeah, I get home and my cat's sort of annoyed. I'm, she's like, what the fuck are you going on with sleeping, motherfucker?
It's you.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you talking about?
Well, we were done with the Kickboxer story, so...
I think what were we talking about is just going to be my new... JC, what's the next story?
That's our catchphrase. Yeah. What were we talking about?
So let's talk about Aaron Hernandez.
So Aaron Hernandez is still in jail.
He is, and this morning they decided to charge him with a whole brand new double murder.
Man,
yeah, they put him in double jail.
He's
our super jail.
He's like an onion of criminals. It's like as you peel back the layers, you just find more murder.
It's like there's more shit. Yeah. More shit. So it was corn.
Yeah. The interesting thing about this is I think in the Odin Lloyd thing, he's not necessarily accused of being the trigger man. He's just accused of, like, plotting it and just kind of being, you know, in among the situation that happened. He was indicted today for a double murder that happened in July of 2012, in which he is accused of being the gunman. And unlike the Odin Lloyd situation, this time prosecutors do have the weapon and they do have the vehicle.
Jesus.
And, yeah, the interesting thing about the timeline, July 2012 was 6 months before he signed his six-year, $40 million deal with the Patriots. It also means that he played 10 games in the NFL after having allegedly killed someone.
I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there as a theory. I don't know for sure. I'm not stating in any certainty. Could Belichick have ordered the hit? because Belichick is a total scumbag, I think. I'm not making any definitive statements. But I think Belichick might be a scumbag.
He's formally Tywin Lannister. We are not actually saying he's a part of this.
He would be Tywin Lannister. No, we're not.
Yeah, we're
not
joking.
Saying it's a joke.
It's a complete joke.
For commentary joke
I'm just
purposes.
Saying. I'm like, liable.
The opinions Slander. Of this podcast do not represent the opinions of this podcast. but here's the thing. I think if they keep doing this, if they keep digging further and further into his past, they're going to find out he killed Tupac.
It's a really
interesting
thing.
Probably kill somebody in Florida that where they might find.
Yeah.
It's just a really interesting thing because I think early on this is something LA might be able to help with. So that the prosecutors might have figured out that they not necessarily overcharged him with the first crime, but
you can definitely overcharge.
Yeah, they charged him with the crime, didn't have a weapon, can't find the weapon, can't find the vehicle. They found the vehicle he used, but yeah. Not a whole lot to hold him over with this one.
If the other side has a good lawyer and you don't have the physical evidence, that gets very hard to do.
Yeah, I think that was a slim, but I mean, not likely, but there was a chance that he could have maybe gotten away with the Odin Lloyd thing. But this one, the prosecutors seem very sure that they have the guy. And like I said, this time they have the weapon, they have the vehicle. Like,
okay, look, at least it was an offer, not then. Like, yeah, great, okay.
He saved the best
killed,
for last.
He killed another person. At some point.
Two people.
So, hey, that being said, killed another two people. Can you just kill him then? Can you just...
Just take him to Texas, hit him with a brick. No, yeah. The thing is, like, there's never going to be a point where there's... They have definitively destroyed any Aaron Hernandez supporter arguments. Because it's just like, oh, you don't think he committed this murder? How about this one, or that one, or maybe this one over here? They still haven't found Jimmy Hoffa, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you get one in your life. You get one trial that, you know, you can win, but if you keep on coming up on these charges, I'm going to start believing you have really good lawyers.
And not only that, but, like, if it had come out that he killed someone while he was in prison,
yeah,
I might have to tip my cap to him a little bit, because it'd be like,
well,
shit, dude.
There are two witnesses.
Oh, come on!
He was fucking joking!
No, there are two witnesses in the Odin Lloyd case, who one of which is his uncle, who died in a car accident mysteriously, and... There's two witnesses in the Odin Lloyd case that could have testified against him that have died in the last year.
Okay, that's
fucked up.
Fuck. Yeah.
No, that is him. He's definitely connected to a gang. Like that. I'm dead serious. That is he is connected to some kind of criminal outfit who was taking care of witnesses. Yeah, there's no way that just happens.
Yeah, when this happened a few months ago, they restricted his phone calls, and they... Because before, he could not make phone calls whenever he wanted, but he was allowed whatever phone calls people normally make. And
Jesus Christ.
And yeah, like, two witnesses against him have died in the last year.
Somebody put Hannibal Hernandez away, please, because this is getting a little bit scary.
Yeah, with this one, it looks... I mean, it seems like these charges will stick, and it's... I mean, either way, he was never going to play in the NFL again, but it looks like hopefully...
I would just prefer he doesn't, you know, be outside of jail again.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that'll happen.
I prefer he doesn't draw breath again. I've been in Texas too long.
The opinions of this podcast do not represent the opinions of this podcast. Moving on to our next story, which is...
So the next story is kind of an interesting one. So a couple days ago, or actually the day after the first round of the NFL draft, when Cleveland Browns were really happy that they got Johnny Manziel and they got Justin Gilbert in the first round, and Josh Gordon is going to come back, and it looks like all was going to be, well, Josh Gordon has a bit of a marijuana problem. He might still be...
Sounds facing, like the party.
Yeah, he might still be facing a season-long suspension because he tested positive a second time for a marijuana test. But the NFL is currently considering a change to their NFL rules, which that the idea is reducing suspensions and raising the threshold in which because the threshold is apparently so low, like you can be in the same room as someone who's smoking a joint and you'll fail a test.
I'm going to throw this out there. Hmm. That means anybody who goes to Denver to play is going to test positive for marijuana, according to the current statute of the NFL.
Or anybody who lives in Austin.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, how can they keep imposing this law when marijuana is legal in, what is it, two states now? And by the way, the two states that were in the fucking Super Bowl last year, Washington State and Colorado are the two states that actually allow marijuana to be recreationally used.
Yeah.
So anybody who's in that stadium, somebody's blazing up a doob in the stadium and that wafts down, apparently, according to the NFL, you could be testing positive. Not only that, but let's put this shit to rest. Unless the football is made out of milk chocolate, marijuana is not a performance-enhancing drug.
Yeah. it's a really weird thing that the NFL has been so rigid on for so long, and now it's an extremely outdated policy because marijuana doesn't have the stigma it used to have. In addition to, a lot of NFL players, former NFL players, have come out and said that, like a lot of people take medicinal marijuana, like, weed helps.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are in pain all year, and weed helps with that. And
if you look at the research on
Ricky Williams is made of it.
Yeah, Ricky Williams is made of marijuana.
He's the Hulk version of marijuana.
The thing is, if you look at the research into all of the actual health benefits of marijuana, it is staggering.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable. Like, the feigned reasons, the manufactured reasons that America keeps claiming that they are, you know, making marijuana illegal, it's just like, for fuck's sake, you just can't make any money off of it.
Yeah.
That's all it comes
to.
You haven't figured out how to make money off of it, so you're demonizing it. Knock it the fuck off.
Well, the only minor health benefits I've seen are the same ones you get from other substances when you consume them too early. Like, it can, they found that it can somewhat warp young brains when they're in the development stage, but that's alcohol too.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's not like we haven't seen this danger.
Not only that, but it's nowhere near as harmful as alcohol is in that regard. And not only that, but it does have a cancer restricting agent. Yeah. THC actually has a researched and documented ability to restrict the growth of cancer cells.
And plus, like, just
and
for someone like me who is really sort of sad that I don't want to do anything that's illegal. Like, I'll just do whatever's legal. You tell me what's legal, I'll see if I want to do it.
Giving me $10.
No.
Damn it.
I would like the ability to do that legally.
I like that you stopped yourself before putting that on the record.
I would like the ability to do that legally. I will never do it while it's illegal, but if it becomes legal, then it already is, but then I can just drink it like I drink a beer. It's like, oh, it's not a big deal.
I would smoke 100 beers.
Yeah. Strangely enough, I was at work, there was a story on one of the daytime talk shows, and I don't remember which one it was, but it was about a mother who had a child with a very rare defect in which she would break out uncontrollably into seizures for no apparent reason. And they couldn't, there's a name for the condition. I don't remember exactly what it is. But there was a doctor that was in Colorado who had actually tested this particular kind of illness against the effects of marijuana. And it's not necessarily, I guess, the type of marijuana that people smoke recreationally. And this is the other thing to take away from marijuana is, like, you can grow it in such ways where it actually it maximizes certain aspects of the plant,
yeah,
and minimizes other parts. Like, it's something that you can actually control. It's a controlled substance in a way that you can define what.
Well, it's like anything
what,
else.
Like, I guess, like, it. Yeah, exactly. Like, what minerals you want to actually include, yeah, within it to maximize, mm-hmm, its potential for health benefits. True. So, it was a thing where it was a 5-year-old girl who was actually not necessarily smoking marijuana, but she was taking in marijuana to bring down the seizures, and it was the only thing medically that they could give her to, yeah, actually make that work. And she became, like, you know, she had brain functionality at that point.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she takes, you know, she eats so much of it in a given day. And it was kind of strange actually watching the talk show, and the mom made the trip to the, you know, to actually give the interview, but she couldn't bring her daughter with her because she couldn't cross state lines, because otherwise she would break out into seizures.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
I mean, I get why cocaine and heroin and meth, I get why those are illegal.
Yeah, because those are fast trains to an early grave. Yeah,
but marijuana, I mean, it's... I've been around people smoking marijuana. They're actually more pleasant to be around.
You ever met an angry pothead? Have you ever once in your life met an angry pothead?
They're so much more pleasant to be around than somebody who's massively drunk. They just want to sit there.
Yeah.
And just.
It's like me sober. I just want to sit there.
We're
slevin' all the time.
And I haven't really met anybody I don't think is actually considered addicted to marijuana.
Like, yeah.
I've met a few.
I've met people who just, like, they really like it and they don't feel any reason why they want to get off of it. So yeah, they just don't.
But I've met people that don't do anything but smoke marijuana all day, but they have addictive personalities anyway.
Yeah, I don't think they're addicted. They're just lazy.
They're just lazy, yeah.
I'm kidding.
It's like George Carlin said, like, show me someone who sits on his couch watching TV smoking weed all day and I'll show you someone who's not causing any fucking trouble.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, they might go steal from a store to get Cheetos.
And it should be stated here that I don't smoke pot. I mean, I've tried it a couple times. I don't really get any appeal out of it.
But here's the thing.
You should weigh that when you consider the arguments I'm making. I am speaking out. I think it should totally be legal, despite the fact that I will never use it because I don't really care for it.
It's one of those.
It's not a situation where I'm like, legalize marijuana so I can use it. I'm saying legalize marijuana because it's the rational thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, not just that. Like, anything that makes a criminal out of 30 million plus people in the country is probably not a very good law.
Anything that requires, and this actually happens, and I wish it was made up, but it's not. Anything that requires the prison systems in America to evaluate their lineups and go, well, because of the war on drugs, we have to have a certain number of people incarcerated for drug crimes.
Yeah.
So we'll keep the three guys arrested with an ounce of pot. We've got to make room for them, so let the three child molesters go.
Well, I mean,
this happens, guys. Well, this happens all the fucking time.
Well, then we get into a discussion of the racist nature of mandatory minimums and why the drug laws were put into effect suspiciously right after Jim Crow was abolished. But then I don't want to get too far.
Yeah, suddenly we're an entirely different podcast. But overall,
research it, guys.
Basically what I'm saying is that you can't get better at football by smoking weed unless your name is Ricky Williams.
Now, what I think they should ban, because this used to piss me off, and I'm a little side... Adderall is fucking cheating. I don't care what you tell me. I'm not kidding. That shit used to piss me off.
See, that doesn't make any sense. Adderall is a drug that's designed to narrow your focus, whereas marijuana does the exact opposite. You're saying that the marijuana is the performance-enhancing drug in this equation.
Because that's the thing you used to see all the time in school. It's like people, like, towards finals, oh, I got some Adderall, and they would just ace the test. And I'm like, you motherfuckers.
It's not illegal. Marijuana is not illegal in the NFL because it's considered a performance-enhancing drug. I guess it's illegal. It's illegal.
So do they have similar penalties for cocaine and heroin?
I would assume so.
No. Yeah.
They do. Okay. Yeah.
I think, you know, just once, I mean, it's coming within the next 10 years, marijuana will be legal.
Yeah, no, it's coming.
It's coming.
The ball's already rolling.
Like, as soon as that point tips where, like, people can get more votes by it, that presidential, not the next one, but the one after that, it's gonna be like, we think marijuana should be legal. Boom, 70%.
Dude, I would so run on that ticket. Like, here's my plan. I'm gonna tax it. I'm going to fix the economy with marijuana tax because I'm sorry, I'll raise the price by $30 a bag. People will still buy it. We will take that money. We will fix the economy. We will have less people in jail for frivolous reasons. Yeah. We will have more real criminals in jail. Like, there is such an easy political ticket to be constructed around legalizing marijuana. Well, and anytime somebody tries to come at you, be like,
oh, really? Where's your research? Like, what research do you have that these claims you're making about how it's a gateway drug are true? Where's the research that actually says that it's more dangerous than alcohol? And just go, like, you could take apart somebody who came at you.
And you know what? Then Josh Gordon can play football.
That's really what this is all about. We just want Johnny Football to have somebody to throw the ball to. Anyway.
Well, he could throw it to Miles Austin, who signed with the Browns today. But
Miles Austin signed with the Browns.
Finally got a team. Okay.
Well, I wonder why that happened. Because not only did Josh Gordon get busted for weed and is facing suspension, but help me out. Their other big receiver.
Yeah, Miles Austin, chronic hamstring. You know what would help with that? Weed.
Weed, exactly.
And bananas.
Their other big receiver, like, broke his arm. Or that they just picked up. They just picked up another receiver. Nate Burleson.
Oh, yeah.
They picked up Nate Burleson, and he injured his arm in practice.
Oh, I thought it was loading on those coats.
Again?
Yep. As of May 9th, he is injured.
Nate Burleson was the guy who broke his arm last year reaching for a pizza. In his car.
What the fuck up?
I'm not blaming him.
I'm blaming him.
No, hold on.
That's why I'm so confused.
We cannot gloss over the fact that despite that, the Browns picked him up. And despite that, he injured himself again. So the Browns are really the big frittatas in the NFL in so many different ways.
Sorry, guys. I pulled my pizza muscle.
I mean, to tell the truth, he pulled his muscle jacking off. That's what happened.
Yeah. I would make up a pizza story, too, if that were the case.
He's like, I was just jacking off all day.
So Josh Gordon is potentially gone for the year.
Yeah,
Vince Young is cut from the squad altogether.
Vince Young's already been cut.
12 days!
Yeah. That was our Vince Young drone flying overhead telling us.
Yep, he's crying again.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, even if the NFL does change its policy, it's probably not going to affect retroactive suspension, so unfortunately it's not... Either way, it's probably not good news for Josh Gordon.
Anyway, what's our next story, JC?
To come to the point.
So we're gonna delve into the Michael Sam story a little bit
later.
That's
a good segue.
Yes, we will.
A story that has come out recently, one of the big arguments that anybody has, if you do happen to be against Michael Sam and the idea of him playing in the NFL, is that he doesn't belong in an NFL locker room because he's gay. Well... Let's take a look at what the most legendary of legendary football icons, Vince Lombardi, thought.
The man whose name is on the trophy that everybody is trying to win.
Yeah. Vince Lombardi was totally accepting of gay players on his team. Had gay players on his team, knew they were gay, went so far as to tell his assistant coaches, specifically regarding Ray McDonald,
if I hear one of you people make reference to his manhood, you'll be out of here before your ass hits the ground.
And not just homosexuals. So think about when he's coaching in the 60s, during his first year in Green Bay, he called his team together on the practice field and he delivered a lecture on racism. He said, if I ever hear N-bombs, anything like that, regardless of who you are, you're through with me. You cannot play on this team.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And on top of all of that, Vince Lombardi had a gay brother. A lot of people might even, skeptics might even be like, well, what's your source? How do you know all this? Well, Susan Lombardi, his daughter, said, my father was way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
So he was someone who didn't discriminate against anyone, no matter who you were, gay, straight, black, white. If that isn't enough to be like...
The game is all that matters.
Yeah, the game is all that matters.
And the irony here that I love so much is that the ultimate prize in the NFL, the real... pinnacle of manhood, and like you really achieved something as an athlete, which is synonymous with being like the ultimate male, mm-hmm. is named after a guy who was like, yeah, I accept gay players, I have a gay brother, I don't care.
I'm gonna play devil's advocate here.
Do it.
I'm full support of Michael Sam, but playing devil's advocate, if somebody's against this, not if you're against Michael Sam, go fuck yourself. Except for the reality show, which that's just weird. But what about the argument that we do have separate locker rooms for men and women? What if you're homophobic and saying, well, I don't want this guy to be attracted to me, but what about saying, I just don't want to shower with a guy? Like, I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just trying to say that argument. What would y'all think about that?
Then go shower elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that argument is, what do you think he's going
to
do to you in the shower?
That's the thing.
No, not what he's going to do. It's not that they think he's going to do to you in the shower, but we don't have men and women shower together.
Well, but see, that's the thing, is that argument.
I guess that's out of respect for, I think, both sexes.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume they want their own. They want their own. They want their own to be separate from the other sex.
Yeah.
So, or maybe not, for all I know.
Yeah.
Shit, have you seen Starship Troopers?
Yeah, they should all shower together.
Dude, yes.
Basically, we can ill afford another Klandathu.
You know what? Actually, that's actually a great. That's actually a. I didn't even think about how brilliant that was. Actually, talking about
brilliant, I think I just said once.
That's the first time I've ever seen heard somebody say brilliant.
But, about no, Starship but Troopers, yeah, but okay. I mean, no,
it is brilliant.
Starship Troopers is actually a brilliant movie.
Yeah.
I know it's sarcastic. It's still sort of silly.
No, actually, I'm not. I'm not really being that.
No, I'm not saying you're sarcastic. I'm saying, favorite movie. I'm saying I know it's like a very it's satire. Yeah. I still think it's a little silly.
But even so, okay. The fact that they actually have males and females showering together in the military atmosphere in that film, I think sort of proposes the idea that when you're working in a team like this, sex deals like the opposite sex matters less or physical attraction matters less. It's a team atmosphere, guys. Like, we work together.
I agree.
We work together, we'll shower together, we'll do this together. Not saying, okay, all, you know, everybody, males and females should always shower together, but you can be comfortable showering with somebody who could be physically attracted to you and not feel offended by that or threatened by that.
I think they should get, I think people have problems to get over. I'm just trying to.
Well, let me say this to that devil's advocate argument. There are still sexual harassment policies in place.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of the, like, if there's a gay person in the shower or not. There, if you're really that concerned about it, you still have options in terms of sexual harassment.
Well, yeah.
So what is it you're actually afraid
of? That's
true.
Yeah, and the balancing test comes down to, is your potential discomfort more than his assured alienation by having to be in a completely separate locker room?
Yeah. I will say this, though.
Which one matters more to us as a society?
As good as this makes me feel, as inspiring as I think Vince Lombardi is as a human being, I reject wholly a statement that Dan Le Batard made recently, just very flippantly, about how the NFL has always been way ahead of this stuff. Meaning basically that the NFL has always been really progressive. And it's like, Dan, I would love for you to say those fucking words to Chris Cluey. I would love for you to sit down in an interview with a guy who was fired from the Minnesota Vikings for speaking in favor of gay rights. A straight man speaking in favor of gay rights who was mocked and like graphically insulted by the special teams coach and then fired for no other reason than his beliefs.
Yeah.
Look him in the face and tell him that the NFL is way out in front and is the most like progressive sport. I'm sorry, sports teams are not progressive.
Well, I mean,
we've got a long way to go. I'm not demonizing them more than any other. I think all of America has a long way to go when it comes to this kind of tolerance and acceptance. I think we all have a long way to go. But to sit there with a straight face and say that the NFL is ahead of the curve on this is just plain idiotic.
You know why they say that? They say that because the first black person to play in the NFL played before Jackie Robinson was actually signed to an MLB team. That's why they say that. That's why they get the right to say that. That's the only reason why.
Yeah, but I mean, he literally.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's the reason why they said they're progressive. They're progressive.
No, no, no. He literally said this after Michael Sam got drafted, almost as a way to kind of say it's not a big deal because the NFL's always been ahead of this. And it's like, it's not
really?
At all. Like,
really? Has it?
No. The NFL has not always been ahead of the curve.
Well,
I'm agreeing with you.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I don't think it's so much of an ignorance thing. I think it's more of a business thing. ESPN is just attached to the NFL because the NFL could leave and they'd be fine.
Yeah.
They don't need ESPN. ESPN needs the NFL.
That's true. That is very true.
Like, they leave and ESPN ceases to be a powerhouse.
Well, I feel like we can't really get into our draft segment without at least mentioning the ongoing tragedy that is Donald Sterling. Like, I have never seen a human being circle the drain as spectacularly as Donald Sterling. So as you guys may remember,
like a turd that just won't flush.
This is I think the still technically owner of the LA Clippers, who was recorded by his mistress saying some very horribly racist things and was recently banned from, I guess he's not the owner because he's been, I don't know.
He's the owner.
For now, he's still the owner, but he's been banned from basketball for life and fined $2.5 million by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. So right after this happens, the first thing that we hear is this report suddenly that's coming to light, that's surfacing, that says Donald Sterling has cancer and has had cancer for a long time.
So the fuck what?
And it was like, just as soon as I heard that, I was like, that is the most ugly, desperate attempt to turn the tide of public opinion back in your favor that I have ever heard. And in fact, it didn't work. What?
And it didn't work.
It didn't work. But not only that, but it's like, people might think that sounds heartless, but
how can you possibly prove that someone has cancer?
Can you just all die
medical
sooner?
All medical documents are not public information.
HIPAA.
You could have a, you could pay it someone to say, "Oh yeah, I'm his physician and he has cancer." There's no way to verify that.
Yeah, he'd have to release those records.
Yeah, which he wouldn't do. So I thought, I immediately thought, this is bullshit. And when that didn't work, as JC said, he went the complete other direction. He appeared on Anderson Cooper 360.
Didn't realize Anderson Cooper was gay, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't understand that. That's quite funny. Which is quite funny.
Didn't but, you ever like a girl that... It's like, well... sorry, the, sorry.
But the thing is, so he goes on this show, and I have to... I've got to a point watching this interview where I kept finding myself saying, do you know people can hear you? Yeah. Are you aware that you're being recorded? Like, because some of the things that come out of his mouth during this interview that he totally thinks justify his racism, that he totally thinks absolve him of being a racist, are even further racist.
Yeah.
It is incredible. Okay, so here's I think, my favorite quote. My favorite quote. One of the things that I said when he's talking about what he said to his mistress that was recorded, one of the things I said was, don't bring blacks to my game. 25% of the people at my games is black. Okay. She would always use the black word. That's a black girl. So when she said, I'll bring four gorgeous black guys to the game, players, I was a little jealous maybe. So basically what he's saying is, I'm not racist for using the word black, so get off my case. It's like, okay, hi, you still said don't bring blacks to my game. Like, I don't care what word you use. Like, the point, you could have said, don't bring any of them to my game. Mm-hmm. It's not the word you used, you idiot. It's that you clearly discriminated against an entire group of people and said, don't bring those to my game.
Well, yeah, and the bigger issue is that he's fine with paying a woman of a different race to fuck him.
Yeah, right. Because that's what it is. She's a prostitute.
Yeah, but she shouldn't have any locus of her own. She shouldn't have any agency. And I don't want to think of them as equal. Like, it's okay for me to pay you to fuck me.
Yeah.
But don't bring to them games like they're equal to me.
Yeah, not only that, but it's like, I'm sorry. Like, you may not be registered anywhere as a prostitute or gotten arrested for it.
You're a prostitute.
But you are literally taking gifts off this crypt keeper to put his ancient hog inside you.
The thing is, I don't fault her because, like, if you look at her story, she grew up dirt poor.
She's a moron.
I don't know what that's like. I don't know what that does to your money motivation. But look,
she has no morals whatsoever. I'm sorry, did you hear about this thing where she wrecked his Ferrari last weekend? She ran her Ferrari into another car and couldn't be bothered to stay around, so had an assistant. First of all, an assistant? How hard is your job fucking old men that you can't keep your own schedule and you need an assistant?
Maybe one grabs one cock for you.
Right?
You...
So she wrecks the car and leaves the assistant there to, quote, deal with it, and she takes off. Woman, that's still leaving the scene of an accident. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You can't designate someone by proxy to talk to the cops for you after an accident.
Unless
that's still illegal, you giant moron.
And you know what I like about this story, actually, is the fact that he went to Anderson Cooper kind of proves the whole thing of he was – people make the argument that he was set up, like she was recording unbeknownst to him of things that he was saying. Well – millions of people are listening at this point, and he is fully aware of that. Does it really make that big of a fucking difference whether or not he knows if he's being recorded or not?
Yeah,
it's like
he keeps dragging Magic Johnson into the situation for no reason. Like,
I didn't do anything to you.
Yeah, and here's
he throws Magic Johnson under the bus that he made him sit in the back of.
Yeah, these are some of his quotes regarding Magic Johnson. He acts so holy. I mean, he made love to every girl in every city in America, and he had AIDS.
When he had those AIDS,
I went to my synagogue and I prayed for him. I hoped he could live and be well. I didn't criticize him. I could have. Is he an example for children? You know, because he has money, he's able to treat himself. Yeah, and he's like, has he done everything he can to help minorities?
You know, when Jews get money.
I like that whole thing of, like, I didn't criticize him, but I could have. Well, you just did. So whatever high horse you thought you were on.
And that's the most dick passive-aggressive way to crack at somebody.
Like, oh, I could have said this about you. I'm not gonna. Oh, wait, I just did.
Yeah. But I just feel like I'm good because I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just continues on. He's like, what has he done? Can you tell me? Big Magic Johnson, what has he done? He's got AIDS. Did he do any business? Did he help anybody in South LA? Well, he's helped a ton of people. He has all these businesses.
I know he didn't kick anybody out of their house.
Has he watched Moesha? I mean, come on. And he was all over that show.
Emmett Smith came out, and he has an organization for children, and he's like, Magic gave us $1 million.
So the answer, you senile old fuck, is yes, he has, and he's also not a racist. Oh, my favorite part, though, is that he then tries to turn it around. He tries to pull a three, or I guess it'd be a 180 on Anderson Cooper 360, and tries to insinuate that Anderson Cooper is, in fact,
he
racist.
He tries to pull a plantation mentality.
You're more of a racist than I am.
He tells Anderson Cooper, you have more of a plantation mentality than I do. And it's like, who the fuck said plantation mentality? Why was that even in your brain?
It's like, how do you even know that word? You should think plantations were great.
Yeah,
like,
right?
You're racist.
And it's like, what exactly did Anderson Cooper do that was racist besides ask you if you're a racist?
Oh. All I can imagine is being in that conversation and be like, okay, let's talk about this thing that you think you're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, it's the equivalent of basically just sitting there and going, no, you are.
Yeah.
And little aside, just a tip to any of our listeners out there who might think it's a good idea, if you're going to invite a black person to your wedding, just give them a heads up it's a plantation wedding. Just saying. It's not a pleasant invitation to get. I'm just throwing it out there.
And to cap all of this, the news as we were coming in today is that now that he is proven to be a total Ishtar of a human being, Donald Sterling has decided via his lawyer to tell Donald Sterling, or to tell Adam Silver, I'm not paying your $2 million fine and I'm suing you.
Good for him.
Okay, it's Donald Sterling, buddy. Stop what you're doing because I'm about to ruin your whole legal defense. Okay, they want you out of the league. Based on the charter that you signed, if they get a certain amount of votes, you're gone. There's nothing you can do. You could throw all the legal money you want at this. You'll go broke and have no leg to stand on.
I mean, the only argument he might have... Oh, sorry.
And guess what's going to make it easier for the people who are on the fence about you to decide to go ahead and vote against you? Hearing that you are rejecting an edict from the commissioner. You can't... You can't do that. I'm sorry. There's nothing that says, oh, the commissioner says I have to pay. Well, I'm not gonna. Yeah, that doesn't give you the legal high ground, buddy.
Yeah.
That just furthers the point that you're a complete scumbag who has no business being associated with any professional sports team or, frankly, any decent human being.
Yeah.
Before we go into our next segment, I want to let you guys know that this episode is brought to you by RockSauce Studios. RockSauce creates gorgeous apps and products that people actually want to use. They start with extensive user experience and make products that the market wants. Then their amazing design team makes it the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Whether you're ready to start your project, looking to schedule a speaking event, or have a couple of questions for their team, reach out to them at www.rocksaucestudios.com and get a little saucy. In just a moment, we are going to give you our breakdown of the NFL draft that happened last weekend. So stick around. Otherwise, you're going to get bumped to the 7th round. You're going to get drafted with people like Dazzler.
I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got the rat patrol on the cat patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cast is closed. Rat critics save money, cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid.
With the second pick in this May 15th episode of Inside the Locker, the sports nerds select a discussion about the 2014 NFL draft. We, as you may know, we got together and we watched the draft last week.
We watched
the first round. Yes, yeah. you're correct on that.
Well, I drink a whiskey drink and then a vodka drink and then a cider drink and then a water drink.
Really, tub thumping?
Yeah.
Is that what you think we were doing? We were tub thumping. We were just pissing the night away. Well, actually, we did.
Oh yeah.
Not only did we watch the NFL draft, but we also played a kind of Hollywood draft game that was a lot of fun. And our subscriber incentive package has gone into effect. So anytime we do a live commentary like that, it'll be completely free to everybody, whether you're a subscriber or not, when we first air it. But the cached audio later is only going to be available to subscribers. And if there is one cached audio that you're really going to want, it's that one, because that game that we created is a lot of fun.
It's great, yeah.
Well, plus, like, I've been subscribing since it started at about $10 a month, and you're a time lord.
You are a time lord.
It's like, subscribing is cool now.
But we're here to talk about the NFL draft. And of course, I think you can kind of boil the draft down to three major narratives. The first being Jadeveon Clowney and whether or not he was going to be the first pick in the draft. Then, of course, is the Johnny Manziel story. Not so much is he going to be the first pick, but if he's not, where is he going to go?
Right.
And then, of course, whether or not any team would roll the dice and draft Michael Sam, the first openly gay player
who would become the first openly gay player in the NFL. And I got to say, that first round did not disappoint. Because the most boring thing that could have happened is if Johnny Manziel goes first to the Houston Texans. Because, I'm sorry, any team in their right mind would want Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
So if Manziel comes off the board, it's not so much where is Jadeveon going to go as who's the next pick. That's where Jadeveon's going to go.
Right.
You say where's Jadeveon, it just reminds me of the El DeBarge song, Where's Johnny, from the Short Circuit soundtrack.
Yeah.
Where's Jadeveon? Where's
Jadeveon? Smiled in his special way and then ripped your helmet off.
Oh, my God, you got it!
Yeah, so much beer. I know that song.
If it had gone like that, if Manziel went first, you know for a fact Clowney goes second.
Mm-hmm.
He goes second, I don't know. On 80% of boards, he goes, on 99% of boards, he goes second at that point. And third pick through 32nd pick is irrelevant at that point unless you're actually a fan of the team.
Right.
Like, the draft becomes completely irrelevant after that point.
Yeah.
So it went exactly, I think, as – it went exactly as ESPN or whoever it was that was actually televising that thing really wanted it to go. Yeah. I really wanted it to go.
Yeah.
And not only that – also a really funny kind of side note. The Texans and the Patriots were playing this really weird chess match game within the draft where – in the second round, the Patriots drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. It was pretty widely known that the Texans really wanted Jimmy Garoppolo because they didn't want to risk a really high pick on Johnny Manziel. Well, the Patriots knew this also, so the Patriots drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round. But the Patriots also really need a tight end because their tight end is currently in jail. And so in the third round, when they...
Still have Gronk.
Yeah, they still have Gronk.
Not joking.
When he's not injured.
Yeah.
Not joking, man. That was amazing delivery.
Yeah. And so in the third round, when the Patriots thought the tight end that they wanted, C.J. Fedorowicz, would still be available. Oh, hey, the Texans drafted him. And the Texans don't really need a tight end.
Just to fuck with him.
So here's my question as to the first round. Who do you think got the most economical pick? And by that I mean one of the lower seeded teams for picks got, you know, for me, I'll give you an example. For me, I think it's Green Bay. Green Bay getting HaHa Clinton Dix at 21 is pretty amazing to me. I did not think he would still be on the board, the safety out of Alabama, who was one of the top ranked defensive players in the nation. I was really, really surprised that he was still available at 21. I don't know. What do you guys think? Who was your most surprising pick in the first round? In that regard,
I may seem kind of biased just because I talk about how I like the city of Chicago and stuff. So I kind of follow the Bears a little bit more than I do any other NFL team, even though I don't have a true favorite NFL team. But their first round pick of Kyle Fuller was a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
That late in the draft, Kyle Fuller has the potential of being the best cornerback in this draft. He's just somebody who's super aggressive, ball hawk. Little Richard Sherman in him. I think that was a really good pick. A pick that a lot of people really like.
Yeah, definitely.
Honestly, for as much as people dislike him and as much drama as he brings to it, I don't think you can argue the fact that the most economical pick was Johnny Manziel at 23rd.
That was the thing. And if you listen to our recording, we made a lot of fun out of this. But when he didn't go first, it wasn't a huge deal. I mean, it was kind of a coin flip as to whether Houston was going to take Johnny Manziel or Jadeveon Clowney because they needed somebody to back up defensively. They needed somebody to back up
J.J. Watt.
And then offensively, there is no way in hell they're hanging the future of their franchise on Case Keenum.
Right.
This is not going to happen. So they really had a need at both those positions. So when they took Jadeveon over Johnny Manziel, not a big deal. But then everybody's talking about, oh, he's going to go to the Browns for sure. But then, of course, there's that, well, he's not going to be available because the Browns aren't picking till 8. There's no way Johnny Manziel is still going to be on the board.
Right.
And we watched as team after team after team passed up Johnny Manziel, and he just sits there with this look on his face. And we actually, Jordan Worth Cobb, who's one of our listeners, made a meme out of the Johnny hubris face.
Yes.
And here's what I find interesting. The picture that Jordan captured, if you look at that picture, Johnny Manziel's drinking a beer.
Yeah.
Okay, Johnny, I'm not saying you can't do that. I believe you're 21 years old. That's fine. It's legal. But you do realize that the reason a lot of teams are waffling on you is because they think you have behavioral issues and that you're not real mature. You know what's not going to help your case is if you're getting sloshed at the NFL drafts, you jackass, which is why he was still available at 8. Here comes the Cleveland Browns. We all knew they were going to, oh, wait a minute, they took Justin Gilbert out of Oklahoma State instead.
Yeah.
That was like, okay, shit. Now what's going to happen? Then the theories start flying. I remember we were like, oh, my God, what if he goes to the Cowboys? And Adam is just sitting there praying,
oh God,
for the love of God, please don't go to the Cowboys at 16. 16 comes around. Johnny Manziel's still on the board. Johnny Manziel wasn't even the first quarterback taken in the draft. Blake Bortles went to the Jacksonville Jaguars, which I actually think is a pretty good pick for them.
Was my pick. That's what I would say gets the best value.
You think Blake Bortles at 3?
Yeah.
I think
he's going to be a good NFL quarterback.
I think the Bills got a steal at Sammy Watkins with the fourth pick.
Bills definitely did great, actually, moving up in the draft to actually take Sammy Watkins.
Yes.
Not only that, but I got to give it up to the Minnesota Vikings, taking Teddy Bridgewater with the very last pick in the first round.
Exactly, yeah.
Teddy Bridgewater is going to start immediately. Christian Ponder is not their guy.
He's going to transpond out of that role.
Exactly. I don't even know what that means, but it's going to happen. And so Teddy Bridgewater is going to start immediately. I can't imagine a scenario in which Johnny Manziel doesn't start for the Cleveland Browns. So how this gets resolved is eventually the Browns, much like they did with Brady Quinn, show up again in the first round, trading up to the 22nd pick in the first round. So it's their second pick of the first round, and that's when they take Manziel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, these are all questions that are very interesting.
That's true.
Because I'm looking at the teams. Let's look at the teams after that 22nd pick. Kansas City, Cincinnati, San Diego, Philadelphia, Arizona, Carolina, New England, San Francisco, Denver. A lot of these teams don't need a quarterback.
Well, Denver, you know, they need
a quarterback. Denver doesn't need a quarterback. Kansas right. City is still really happy with Alex Smith. Cincinnati, I don't know if they're really going to stay with the ginger. Yeah. Andy Dalton. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, San Diego's still largely happy
with
Rivers. The Eagles have a burgeoning star under center right now.
Right. And a sleeper
Arizona
fantasy pick.
Right. Arizona would be if he didn't go 22nd to the Browns, Arizona would be the only other place I could potentially see taking Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, because Carson Palmer is actually just like a toss-up.
He's a placeholder.
Yeah.
He's not a franchise guy. Literally just there because they needed somebody at that point.
He was the franchise player for Cincinnati, 10 years ago.
But Carolina, New England, San Francisco, Denver, none of those teams need a quarterback. So I actually think the Browns could have gambled. The Browns could have let him come off and gone to the second round because in the second round, they had the third pick.
And they could have just paid
They had the third
less.
Pick in the second round. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? That's an interesting question.
Who was ahead of them in the second round, though?
Houston.
Houston.
Oh, Houston would have taken
him. All right. You know what? That's a very good call.
No, Houston would have taken him.
But anyway, in terms of economics, getting a player, because when you get Johnny Manziel, even if he never plays for you, if he never sets foot on the football field, you just sold thousands of season tickets.
And they did. They immediately
exactly.
They got like a 2,300 boost in season ticket purchases the first day,
right?
And Johnny Manziel jerseys were selling like crazy. Now we come to the third storyline that we've mentioned in Michael Sam. Now Michael Sam is a player that came out. He was SEC Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, which is not easy to do.
No faint praise whatsoever. And at the end of the season, he came out of the closet that he was gay. What? Oh, to the media.
He already told the media. I'm not knocking him. I think it's like he wanted to make sure, completely sure, whoever drafted him knew what they were getting.
Right.
Well, but I feel like the reason he told his teammates before he ever told the public, and I think it was so that it didn't become a distraction.
No, and I agree. I'm not trying to knock him. I'm just saying.
But that being said, I feel like there comes a certain point where it's just like, look, I'm gay. Like, we're going into this draft. Like, people need to know who I am. And that, you know, that immediately started hanging over people's heads like, okay, is anybody going to take him now? And then on top of that, unfortunately, he didn't have the greatest pro day.
Right.
So he actually dropped to the second to last pick in the draft, or the third to last pick.
The third to last?
Yeah, not quite. Yeah, no.
It's summer back there.
It's deep in the seventh round before they take Michael Sam.
That's absurd.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Seven players after.
Okay, so he's number 250 out of 256,
that's
guys.
That's still absurd.
It's super absurd. And so the big controversy is that they, for some unknown reason, they still had a camera in Michael Sam's house.
This is the only time I have ever seen it in my entire life where someone who was drafted late in the seventh round is still being televised. Usually by that point, the analysts are talking as the picks are just bing, 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 right. bing, 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 off the board, and you never even see the person. But they still, because ESPN, or I'm sorry, the NFL Network, they knew that was that drama was one of the big driving narratives this year. And as soon as he gets drafted, he does what any heterosexual person would have done in a relationship. Yeah, he kissed his significant other, who just happened to be his boyfriend in this case. People, of course, flipped out.
Case McCoy.
What?
Case McCoy flipped his shit.
Did he really?
Really?
I think so. Let me check.
Oh my god, I hope not, because that's not gonna look. You know who's not gonna tolerate that shit? Is Charlie.
Yeah, his new African American quarterback or coach?
Yes, absolutely. not gonna tolerate that very well. But here's the thing.
Yeah, Case McCoy.
Case is a senior. He's not playing this year, so.
He's a senior, so he's not.
Senior.
He's done, I think.
Yeah. He's already graduated.
Yeah.
Oh, right. We're it's May. I was like, wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Sorry, I lost track of the time of year it was. Hooray.
He said, you're kidding me, right? With the coverage?
Yeah, right?
So, sorry, dudes. Here's
the thing. St. Louis did incredibly well in this draft, just overall.
Oh, yeah.
They really got some key players, and they drafted so, like, they got multiple picks in multiple rounds, drafted great players, and they took Michael Sam, and they were very emphatic that it's like, we don't care that he's gay. He's going to have a chance to compete for a spot on this roster like anybody else. You might be able to make the argument that the St. Louis Rams are looking for a good PR, you know, a good PR day. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit what the reason is.
I mean, you can
they
make
still
the,
took Michael yeah. Sam.
You can make the argument about anybody. Like, yeah. anybody who's going to take him, you can say that for
him. The thing is, it was an incredibly shrewd move because, like, they could have always intended on drafting him, and if they get him, they get him, that's great. If they don't, they're not going to be wedded to him.
Yeah.
But not to make fun. But they got to, like, give him a really low contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And pay him a lot less money. And,
which I don't think is indicative of them having a problem with his sexuality.
I think it's shrewd.
I think it's
indicative of them being nervous about his pro day. But I think they also recognize the potential in somebody who, again, won the SEC Defensive Player of the Year award.
Right.
And I feel like because of the chip on his shoulder, he is going to work 10 times harder than anybody else that was drafted. And I'm really curious to see, you know, what happens.
I would say that I'm not knocking him. Well, I'm going to knock him now, but not for him being gay. I don't like the idea of him getting a reality show.
Okay, so this reality show thing, apparently he's going to be doing something with Oprah, following around, you know, basically his journey to the draft and getting drafted. I'm actually okay with it in the sense that I don't see a huge difference between that and some of the 30 for 30 documentaries we really love.
Well, as long as it's not ongoing is the thing.
Well, they're not going to have access. They've already said they're not going to have access to any practices or anything. It's really just going to be about him personally.
Yeah.
So I don't see huge
issue. They're going to air in October.
Because they're saying reality show, but it's really like a multi-part documentary.
Oh, that's fine. Then. I thought it was like air on like E or something.
No. It's Oprah Winfrey behind it, putting together basically the story of the first openly gay player in the NFL.
Cool. Go do it. Mm-hmm.
The reaction to that has actually been the most baffling to me, and specifically, I'm going to do this again. I'm going to call out Dan Patrick, because Dan Patrick started his segment about this by saying, we don't know whether or not Michael Sam disclosed this to the St. Louis Rams, which I would imagine he would have had to, otherwise they wouldn't have known whether or not they were going to have access to the practices, but then proceeded to judge Michael Sam for not disclosing the information when Dan Patrick himself said he didn't know whether or not that was true. So it just seems like people are looking for new and different reasons to criticize Michael Sam. And I'm not saying that Dan Patrick is a bigot. I'm not saying Dan Patrick hates gay people.
He is stupid.
He's not. Dan Patrick makes some very, like, first-year debate class mistakes.
He makes specious assumptions.
Specious assumptions that would get you kicked off the forensics team. That's all I'm saying. And I, you know, like I said, I'm rooting for Michael Sam to do well because I think this is a great story. But if he is legitimately unsuccessful in his quest to be an NFL player based solely on merit, I'm not going to crucify the St. Louis Rams.
The thing is, we're never going to know that.
But we will never know.
And I'm not knocking you. I'm saying, like,
no, we
it's,
won't.
Just, it's the nature of results. We will know if he's successful. We will never know if he's unsuccessful, why he's not unsuccessful. And that actually, I'm going to bring it back to the point we've already talked about in this show. This is the reason why, the ultimate reason I feel like college players should be paid, because it is so hard to have a good career in the NFL.
It really
is. To even get drafted in the NFL, and you're doing all this work, and you can get nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, just they should have something when they come out, because you got 4 years of work and nothing to show for it.
So another storyline here that's not quite as important at all, not at all as important, is that I'm not noticing a lot of improvement in the running game by the Dallas Cowboys, who historically have not been so great at running the football.
No, this is the thing. The Dallas Cowboys are actually great at running the football.
They don't run, but
they just don't do it.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, when they've had running back talent, they haven't run the ball.
DeMarco Murray is a Pro Bowl running back. They just don't run him.
I'm going to let you think about that statement for a second, because you're right. You're absolutely right. But if they're not running the football when they have a Pro Bowl running back, is it too much confidence in Tony Romo, or is it not enough confidence in somebody who's already proven to be a Pro Bowler in DeMarco Murray?
No, keep in mind, they ran the ball, I think, statistically much less this year than they had in any other prior year. Yeah. Like, Tony Romo threw the ball statistically more than he ever had. This is also the first year in which Tony Romo called his own plays.
Wow.
Like, they gave him control. They gave him on-field control the same way Peyton Manning does.
Yeah.
So when you've got Romo on the field and he's calling the plays and he's calling it as he sees it, I guess, in terms of – honestly, it's not like the head coach doesn't have the ability to override Tony Romo and say, look, we have success running the ball. Run the fucking ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, so I don't know exactly who to blame in that, but the Dallas Cowboys have running back talent, and DeMarco Murray can actually – it's hard to say he can actually carry a team on his back being a running back, because I don't know, because they don't ever give him the fucking ball enough to know whether or not he actually can or not. But when they do give it to him, I mean, his legs are fresh, he's a power runner, and he's got speed. He can carry them to the playoffs.
It highlights an interesting evolution in the position of the running back, in that this is the second year in a row a running back wasn't taken in the first round.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up, because, Adam, I actually sympathize with you on this point, because the Cowboys had two picks before the first running back came off the board this year. And keep in mind that this year's running back class includes Carlos Hyde, who is a tank.
And Jeremy Hill.
Carlos Hyde out of Ohio State is just a big bruiser of a running back.
He was the third running back taken.
And he was the third running back taken. And I was screaming at the screen for the Indianapolis Colts, who... the reason they didn't have a pick in the first round this year is because they gambled on Trent Richardson from Cleveland, which turned out to be a huge bust. Like, selling you a used car lemon bust. Thank you very much, Cleveland, with your used car shysters running your front office. Anyway, so I was like, okay, the Colts don't have a pick in the first round, but there wasn't a running back taken in the first round. And then as the second round started going, wait, guys, there's been no running backs. We're sitting at 59. And it wasn't until pick 54 that a running back came off the board. The Tennessee Titans took Bishop Sankey out of Washington. And I was screaming at the screen, please, Colts, do whatever you have to. Trade up and get Carlos Hyde. Get Carlos Hyde to back up Trent Richardson, because we lost Donald Brown. Mm-hmm. So really, we don't have – unless Ahmad Bradshaw makes a miraculous recovery and is as good as he was 5 years ago, we really don't have any – like. Second runner tandem for Trent Richardson. And if there's one thing the Denver Broncos illustrated leads to success, it's having more than one good running back in the backfield. Because they had Knowshon Moreno and Monty Ball both putting up exceptional performances all year long.
Right.
So I was like, please just trade up, get Carlos Hyde. And of course, that didn't happen. And instead, we took Jack Muhort, an offensive tackle out of Ohio State, which I will say, Andrew Luck could stand a little bit more time in the pocket, but I don't think it's such a desperate need, because if there's one thing Andrew Luck can do, it's make plays when he's scrambling. Sure. It's make plays out of absolutely nothing.
Well, and then you also have to – I mean, I think the fall for running backs, I think, has less to do with the talent at the running back position more than it does the value of the running back in the NFL. So,
absolutely. We talked about this at the free agency last year.
I mean,
when all these running backs were just still sitting there and not signed any teams.
And it's strange in the sense that the first running back doesn't go until the second round. If they're not going to the second round because teams don't need running backs because they devalue running backs. I can't imagine that. Okay, if you're somebody like the Colts, honestly, the Cowboys, I think, to me, are in a different position, because the Cowboys have at least a legit first string running back, like a Pro Bowl running back. They do need somebody to back them up, but I guess I wouldn't. It is a devaluation of the running back position to think that you waste your first pick in the draft to back somebody else up.
Yeah.
If you're gonna use your first pick in the draft, no, not your first pick in the draft. You're gonna use your first round pick. you pick somebody who you want to start for you next year.
Yeah.
And if it's not going to be – if you don't need a running back, that's not going to be him. But in the Colts' position, with them being – it's the second round, and you are in the position to take possibly the best person at their position in the draft, you do that.
Yeah, I mean, all they had to do was trade up four spots, and they would have got him.
Offensive tackle? How many offensive tackles were taken before that offensive tackle fell to them?
Several.
So, I mean, you're taking the seventh best person at that position over the first best person at a position that you actually need.
Yeah. Well,
plus, I mean, even beyond that, they wouldn't have to even trade up. Like, you can get the second best running back in the draft.
Yeah,
right.
I would have taken. Yeah, that's the thing is. By the time it got to them, it's not like there weren't any running backs available. Yeah. But I think you've hit it on the head exactly, and it's what we were talking about during free agency last year. I think it's because of these new rules that protect passers and receivers and quarterbacks to the point that the running game itself has become devalued.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the Cowboys apparently are just really prescient and figured this out several years before it was actually the case. But it just seems like the NFL, like all these teams are figuring out, if we can get away with so much more in the passing game, and we can all put up when Nick Foles can throw the same amount of record-breaking touchdowns in a game as Peyton Manning, obviously the game has changed a little bit.
Yeah, all right? These rules
in a single season.
Yeah, and all these rules protecting the receiver, and also limiting what a cornerback can do.
Yeah,
You can't do near what you could to keep a pass from going through.
Yeah,
the NFL is consciously making the game a more pass-happy game.
Because that's what's more exciting, and that's what sells more tickets.
What used to win games was getting that running back that could just – getting a running back in a line that could just march down the field. That's what Alabama does in a college. Yeah. They will just march you down the field and say, we just scored. We took 10 minutes to score.
Mm-hmm.
Come back and pass if you want, but we'll just score again.
Marshawn Lynch may end up being the last of that breed of running back where it's literally just a wrecking ball.
Yeah.
That's a major weapon for you. You just kind of point it in the direction of the end zone and knock people over.
He and Peterson, and Peterson just happens to be on a team that sucks.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, it's actually funny. It's strange to see the trend in the devaluation of the running back position and the increased value of the cornerback, of a shutdown corner.
Yes.
You know, as running backs are struggling to actually find teams, cornerbacks are signing record-breaking deals all this year.
Oh, yeah,
like,
Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman, Joe Hayden, Earl Thomas.
Yep.
Like, these guys are getting record-breaking deals.
Adam, you were absolutely right. There were no running backs taken in the first round. There were five corners.
Exactly.
Five cornerbacks taken in the first round.
I mean,
running backs.
Yeah, if the offensive focus of most teams is now on the passing game, if you can find a cornerback to actually shut down half of the field, and you get I guess as a defensive scheme, what I would do if I was a coach, and I can see teams sort of do this, you put a cornerback, you put a shutdown corner on one side, you put a pass rush specialist on the other side.
Yep.
You've got a pass rush specialist on one side taking the quarterback like he's getting him outside of the pocket, and he's forcing him to go to the side of the field that the shutdown corner has on your best receiver.
Yes.
He can't do anything with the ball anymore unless he wants to throw across his body.
Yeah.
And you're seeing a lot more teams have, you know, like – starting level receivers having more than one of them. Like, Chicago's got Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey.
The new monsters of the Midway.
Right. Yeah, Cleveland had Josh Gordon, and they signed Nate Burleson, who, you know, despite his injury history, and they signed Miles Austin. Incidentally, I think Cleveland really screwed up that third pick in the second round because, you know, on the heels of the Josh Gordon news, like, Marquise Lee was right there.
That's such a bumble to me. You're absolutely right. Marquise Lee is still sitting there.
Yeah.
There's so many great receivers this year. Marquise Lee is still available, and instead they take an offensive tackle when they knew. It wasn't like this information came to them after the draft was over. They knew about the impending Gordon suspension, and they knew that Burleson was injured. There was no reason for them not to take a receiver at that point.
And that's strange. You take an offensive tackle. They've got Joe Thomas. Joe Thomas is one of the best offensive tackles in the league.
Yeah.
So why do you take a tackle?
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And unfortunately, the real Cleveland Browns are not as savvy as the Cleveland Browns in draft day. That's basically what we're learning.
They need Kevin Costner.
They do need Kevin Costner.
Which is the only time somebody said that ever.
After the postman, that's the first time anyone's ever said that. So, JC, is there anything else about – I will say this.
this draft, with all these storylines going on, and we were talking about it being exciting, it got more ratings than any draft previously.
Really?
Yeah. It got the most ratings of any draft. That
Maybe
first
draft day did it.
It could be draft day, or it could be that there were so many storylines that even people who aren't super into football were following.
Yeah. The other interesting storyline that a lot of people were talking about nationally, so even though we happen to live in Austin, it essentially affects us the most being in this city. First draft since 1937, not a single Longhorn was taken
in the draft. Yep.
Wow.
And, you know, you had a lot of people at the end of Mac Brown's career saying, pretty much because he beat Oklahoma his last year, like, give him another chance. Well, this is the legacy he left behind. Left behind a legacy of a draft of which not a single NFL Longhorn or Texas Longhorn was taken.
And actually the one that would have gone, Gary Gilbert, who decided to leave because of the other quarterbacks that they brought in, and he was playing second fiddle to David Ash and Case McCoy, goes to SMU, and he gets drafted.
Yeah. Well, that and what happened to Gilbert is just so – and I don't put it on the coaching. Excuse me. It's so unfair to put like a guy who's never started before – put him in the biggest game of his career.
But that's not why he failed, though. Like, that's actually
what... I think that threw him off.
That's actually why people were excited about Garrett Gilbert, is because of the performance he put in the national championship game.
No, like, I think that game threw him off completely.
I completely disagree with you there. Like, I mean, he goes into a position where he's not actually expected to do anything. Like, he has one of the worst first halves in national championship history against one of the best defenses in national championship history. Mm-hmm. And he comes back and he throws two touchdowns. He gets them within striking distance of actually winning against Alabama.
And in that game, and had it not just been for that fucking stupid shovel pass, like how...
Right.
It
was right in there. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, the next year he underperforms. Like, he does fine. Yeah. You know, he does fine, but not by Texas quarterback standards, especially for Colt McCoy and Vince Young coming right before him.
And to contrast all of that, like in Charlie Strong's last year at Louisville, like he had three of his former players taken in the first
round, right? So I think that's the thing to take away from the Mac Brown tenure, at least of the last 4 years, is there's never been a point in history in which Mac Brown did not have a top 10 recruiting class.
Hey, speaking of Mac, the MAC conference, where my tiny little alma mater of Ball State University is a member, had two players taken in the first round, which, if you're playing at home, means there were more players taken from the MAC in the first round than there were running backs taken in the first round.
Would you say it was the return of the MAC?
Once again?
Return of the MAC.
Yes, I do. You knew that I'd be back with that joke.
Come on. Yeah, you're right. I can just throw it up.
There you go.
So Khalil Mack was taken fifth, by the way.
Oh. The draft of the Mac.
Khalil Mack, whose walk-up song was not Return of the Mac.
Yeah. It should have been. Such a missed opportunity.
It should have fucking
And also,
been.
Can we talk about that, about this entrance music phenomenon going on with the draft?
The most was apparently a low black, like a bunch of them had... played the man.
Well, not only that, but the NFL Network played it between every, like, on their way to every commercial break.
That man's having a good year.
He got the residual checks paid to him and Drake this year at the draft. It's because so many people wanted to remind us that they started from the bottom and now they're about to be drafted to once again be at the bottom. I'm sorry. If you think the draft is starting at the bottom and getting somewhere, you obviously don't know how much work you actually have to put in once you're drafted.
Unlike Drake, they don't have to say started from Degrassi and now I'm here. Like, you know, you started as a really popular actor when you got into rap.
Yeah. Not exactly the bottom.
Incidentally, the funniest walk-up song is Teddy Bridgewater, who chose The World's Greatest by R. Kelly.
I'm the world's greatest. I am a mountain. I am a tall tree. Yeah. Oh, I am a valley. Yeah.
If I ever had entrance music for anything, I would do something just like completely off the... I do an Oompa Loompa song.
Yeah. And I would do the Matlock song.
Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
Uptown Girl.
Uptown Girl. Yes. That's not bad. I would come out to One Night in Bangkok by Murray Head.
Yes. Fuck yes.
People would be like, yeah, we didn't know where he was between the end of the college season and the draft. Was he in Bangkok?
One Night in Bangkok.
Yeah, I was playing chess in Bangkok. Draft me. What's up?
But the queens we use would not excite you.
Such a good song, everybody should know. I'm just going
to
throw that out.
But anyway, the reason, I guess what I was getting to with the whole Mac Brown thing was, in the last 5 years, in which he still had top 10 recruiting classes, it just goes to show that Mac Brown is a great politician, and he's very good with students and kids, but he is not, I don't think he's actually the best at developing talent. Like, taking them from high school and developing them into
He's not,
I guess,
an
NFL ready player. Like the players who actually go to the players from UT who in the past, like, I guess 10 years or so have gone to the NFL and actually succeeded, they were actually lower tier UT players aside from maybe Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas is probably the best of the class of Mack Brown's tenure at Texas, who developed into next level talent, like Earl Thomas and Jamaal Charles. But Jamaal, like, even coming out of college, I never would have guessed that Jamaal Charles would have had the career that he did.
Yeah.
Going into the pros.
And a lot of his former players are just so versatile. Like, Henry Melton is a defensive tackle now. He's a running back.
He's a running back in Texas. Yeah.
It pays to be versatile. But let me ask you this. How does that affect – how does the fact that not a single UT player was taken in this draft affect Charlie Strong's ability to recruit at Texas this year?
You know, I don't know.
I think it gives him more freedom.
I think it speaks more to the fact that Charlie Strong had three players taken in the first round that actually really plays to his benefit, much more so than it does Texas having nobody going in the draft at all.
If it hurts, I think it might hurt the first year, but I think Charlie Strong clearly has proven in a place that's not a perennial football powerhouse like Louisville that he can recruit some good players.
Yeah, and Charlie Strong is still hungry. Mm-hmm. Like, Matt just was comfortable.
Yeah.
He was just like, I get to go to Pars, I get to live in Austin. Yeah, it's great.
It's a great impression. Spot on. Yeah.
I get to sell some furniture every now and then. Oh, that's a different guy.
It's probably going to hurt the recruiting, maybe the personality of Charlie Strong versus the personality of Mack Brown. Mack Brown has that personality of, like, he's sort of that magnetic, you want to come play for him only because... If for no other reason other than the fact that you like him. You may not like him as a coach. He may not actually make you a better player. But as a high school player, you may not care. You may not, you know, if you come in with the hubris of thinking, like, I'm an All-American, I can, you know, I'll come to the next level, I'll do whatever the fuck I want. Well, then you're going to go play for somebody who's going to be somebody more like a Mack Brown and or a Pete Carroll. And they just, I don't know if they necessarily let you do what you want.
They don't push you.
But they don't push you in a way in which, like, I guess a high school coach does it.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Like, I think a lot of people publicize how strict the rules are that
Charlie Strong is putting out.
And a lot of people, recruits may not be like, well, I don't necessarily want to go to a place with all those rules. Well, yeah, but then you could come to a place and not get drafted.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, it's the same thing if you choose an easy job over a hard job. Well, the easy job is fun while it's going on, but, you know, you're not going to be as well trained as that guy who's doing that really hard job for a few years.
Right. Yeah. Actually, one of the things I'm really interested in seeing this next year is the development of Jonathan Gray, who's their current first string running back.
Well, I thought he was the Phoenix.
Well, he was a highly touted recruit coming out of high school. Like, I think he was actually the highest rated running back the year that he came out of high school. Texas got him. He has done very, very little, like, in his first 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if a lot of that has to do with the lack of potentially the lack of coaching coming from Mack Brown's assistants and such.
It has to, because, like, if you look at the UT games these last few years, they couldn't fucking tackle.
Like, no, yeah, they really couldn't.
Like,
yeah.
You just fucking wrap up. Get low and wrap.
Oklahoma State quarterback was running all over them in the game that I watched last year. It was like, pretty embarrassing.
I mean, that's just bad coaching.
Yeah.
That's all that is. It's a dang old coach mistake.
It's pathetic.
So what else do we have anything else to say about the draft?
I got one thing to say. Please. I want to salute the Texans for actually addressing their needs and not going for the flashy pick.
Well, I would argue that the flashiest pick in the draft was also a major need of theirs. I think they took the right player. I will give them that.
I was just so worried they would get Manziel.
But that's what I'm saying, is that they need a quarterback. They need a Manziel, but they also need a Clowney. So.
Yeah, I think you can... I'd rather have one side of my team just stacked. And then I will address the quarterback. I'll trade for somebody who's like a placeholder until I can get a better quarterback.
I will grant you that, but I will say that they've been that way, stacked on one side, pretty much since their inception.
Oh, that's another story that came out of it. Andre Johnson's thinking about leaving.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
He has nobody to throw them the ball.
That'd be interesting.
He didn't have anybody to throw him the ball when Matt Schaub was here either, so...
another kind of semi-interesting... you know, Tom Brady's getting up there in years, and so the Patriots drafted Jimmy Garoppolo.
Which means where is Ryan Mallett's place on that team?
Yeah, and so, I mean, part of this, the whole Texans versus Patriots and taking each other's draft picks thing...
Playing the Weinstein game at the draft.
Yeah, happened because the Texans are trying, and they're probably still actively trying to get Ryan Mallett. I think the asking price was too much for him, and I think that's why the Patriots kind of got...
So the Patriots kind of... In a move that is just pettiness, took a quarterback they didn't need just because they knew Houston wanted him.
Yeah.
That sounds like Belichick to me. That sounds so, exactly Bill Belichick.
I mean, this is the, okay. They are a division rival, are they not?
Houston and New England.
No, they're not. Houston and Indy. So never mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, if it's a division rival, yeah, that's exactly what you fucking do. Like, yeah. If you're the New England Patriots and you don't have a direct need for something at in a given round, yeah. Fuck yeah, I take somebody who I don't want to go to another team.
About it is, so yeah, they have Tom Brady and then they have two essentially highly touted quarterbacks so you don't need both of them. Especially since Tom Brady doesn't let the backup get reps in practice, which is immature.
What?
But he doesn't let the backup
canoe.
Get.
He is a douche canoe.
Yeah.
If I see one more Ugg boot commercial with that fucker.
So yeah, I mean, look for Ryan Mallett or possibly Jimmy Garoppolo to be on the move.
Yeah. No, that'll be really interesting. Before we go, I do want to make an announcement. We to answer some of your questions. Are doing a big event for the World Cup. That's right. We are actually going to be doing a live event at a venue here in Austin where we're going to be covering all 4 days. Excuse me. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We will be doing live broadcasting with our friend Ramon, who has been on the show several times, who actually has his own soccer podcast called International Players Anthem. So we're going to be teaming up.
That's the name?
Yes.
I fucking love that song.
We are going to be teaming up with him to do a live broadcast throughout the entirety of the World Cup, talking about the games, talking about soccer in general, talking about a lot of random topics, but it's going to be a blast. You'll be able to hear everybody enjoying it in the background and do some giveaways. It's going to be a good time. So that is going to be the weekend of, I think, June the 12th, 13th, that area right there. So just we'll have more posts with more details, but just to let you guys know who have been asking, yes, indeed, we are going to do something for the World Cup, and it's actually going to be pretty huge, so... we will have more info on that as we get closer to time. But that, guys, that's going to do it for this week on the show. Before we go, I do just want to remind you yet again that we're available on iTunes and on Stitcher. You can also follow the show on Twitter at ITLcast, or you can follow us individually. I am at Bryguy Salisbury.
At the underscore beef.
At ITL Elliot.
At JC Deleon 1.
And please do consider becoming a subscriber. Like I said, we have all those incentives in place now. So it's never been a better time to give, even at the red shirt level, for oneofus.net. And not only that, but please do use our Amazon links whenever possible. If you're going to be buying something from Amazon anyway, please come here first. Click on our pick of the week. It'll take you right to Amazon. Whatever you buy from that point benefits the site. And yeah, thank you so much for joining us on Inside the Locker Room. To close out, like I always do, by reminding you that sports are not just for jocks anymore.